Do we want to be many or one? Since last fall, every month, I've been exploring values and ideas that are in a new statement of UU Values and Covenant that is going to be voted on this summer to be part of the bylaws of the UUA. Isn't this exciting? And it is exciting because it's an exploration of values of what we think makes us who we are as Unitarian Universalists, what we want to aspire to be. One of the named values is pluralism. And the description of it in that statement goes like this. Pluralism, we celebrate that we are all sacred beings, diverse in culture, experience, and theology. We covenant to learn from one another in our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. We embrace our differences and commonalities with love, curiosity, and respect. Pluralism, celebrating the many. The main metaphor that I learned growing up in school for celebrating the many was that of the melting pot. The United States is a melting pot. It is full of people from all over the world. I don't remember the folks who were already here being mentioned in these stories. And we join together in one big melting pot, all of us becoming Americans. The metaphor of this melting pot was popularized by a play called The Melting Pot, written by a man named Israel Zangwill. Zangwill was born and died in England, where his Jewish family had immigrated from Lithuania. I found the image of a theater program for a version of the show that was put on in 1916. But President Theodore Roosevelt saw it in 1908. In a history book, I learned that Roosevelt wrote to Zangwill after he had seen the play, "I do not know when I have seen a play that stirred me as much." In the play, the hero at one point says, "Germans and Frenchmen, Irishmen and Englishmen, Jews and Russians, into the crucible with you all, God is making the American." The image that was made for that 1916 theater program is kind of disturbing. It brings to mind more bubble, bubble, toil and trouble than melting pot. It's all these lines and lines of people swirling around, all parading down into this big pot with the great seal of the United States of America on it, and flames licking up and around the pot from underneath. The words are "E pluribus unum," from many, one. In the melting pot, you will evidently be boiled down to slag and then reformed. It really doesn't seem to be a celebration of manyness or of difference, as much as it's about a oneness that subsumes and overcomes the many. Are we one or are we many? In one of my favorite readings, the late Reverend Dr. Hope Johnson writes, "We are one, a diverse group of proudly kindred spirits here, not by coincidence, but because we chose to journey together. We are one." I think Unitarian Universalists like to celebrate both oneness and manyness, and there is a kind of seductiveness about that image of oneness that I think is wonderful and something that we should just pay attention to. We like to celebrate that there are many different religious and spiritual paths. I mean, look at the quilt behind me. All those symbols from all those different religious traditions proclaiming that we value pluralism. That's the message. One of the early formative statements about appreciating different religions that happened in this country was written by a Unitarian minister named Thomas Wentworth Higginson. Higginson is the Atlantic Monthly writer that Emily Dickinson wrote to, wanting to know if her poetry was any good. She said, "Are my poems alive?" was the question that she wrote to Higginson. And they maintained a correspondence through the whole of her life, and he helped publish her poems after she had died. Thomas Wentworth Higginson. He did a lot of things. One of the things that he is best known for, at least he was at the time, and this is, we're talking 1871, is that he published an essay titled The Sympathy of Religions. And in it he observes, "Every year brings new knowledge of the religions of the world, and every step in knowledge brings out the sympathy between them. They all show the same aim, the same symbols, the same forms, the same weaknesses, the same aspirations. Looking at these points of unity, we might say there is but one religion under many forms." Higginson wants to persuade people to appreciate religions other than their own. He wants his audience to get their head out of the Christianity that he's assuming that they were raised in, and see that there's more than that, something bigger than that. I think he wants us to respect other religions. He is confronting an attitude of Christian exclusivism, that Christian religion is the only true religion. He's arguing against that. He's arguing against the message that says in Christianity, when you encounter another, that the task is to proclaim that faith tradition, whatever they've got, as wrong, and bring them into the Christian house. It's not just a late 19th century attitude. In her book, Holy Envy, the theologian and teacher Barbara Taylor Brown reflects on her many years of teaching World Religions 101 at the Piedmont College in Georgia. She tells a story about one student who was concerned, quote, "If you really are a Christian," he says to Taylor, "then are you going to help us see what is wrong with these other religions? From what you've said so far, it doesn't sound like it, and if that's the case, then I don't think I can stay in the class." Then she shares the story of taking her class on a field trip to a Hindu temple. There are statues of gods all around in the space inside the temple. There's all this kind of a riot of color and sounds and images. They witness a weekly ritual where the priests bathe and dress in new clothes Padmavati, who is a manifestation of Lakshmi. The students wander about and explore the statues to the other gods in the temple, and Taylor notices a first-year student rush out of the temple, and she follows, finds the student just outside, crying so hard that she cannot answer me when I ask her what is wrong. Finally, she catches her breath just long enough to tell me, "They are all so lost, and they don't even know it." This brings on a fresh round of tears, after which she manages a few more words between tattered breaths. "It is just so sad to me," she says, "seeing people worshiping statues when they could be worshiping Jesus instead." And Taylor treats the student with compassion and understanding and says, "Why don't you just stay out here and take a breath and maybe say a few prayers, and we'll come get you when we're done." To me, that story feels a little shocking, and I'm assuming that since you walked into a UU space this morning, that you probably feel a little shocking too, that story. We try to encounter different faith traditions with curiosity and respect. Many of the roots in that effort are in Higginson and that essay of his, The Sympathy of Religions. He says at one point in that essay, Higginson does, that when we fully comprehend the sympathy of religions, we shall deal with other faiths on equal terms. And I think that sounds like one of our aspirations. And then in the next sentence, he says, we shall then cease trying to free men from one superstition by inviting them into another. He's appreciative, and I believe that Higginson feels an honest appreciation of other faith traditions, other religions, but he stresses the commonalities, the sympathies so much that he kind of reduces them all to one thing. It's kind of melting pot-ish. What he does is say that all of these faith traditions, they all boil down to, and boy, that feels different with that melting pot image, doesn't it? They all boil down to an expression of what we could all see revealed in nature. All those religions are wrong and mine is right? No. It's so tempting to take that attitude. Higginson tells the story of attending a Holy Week service at a Catholic church on this beautiful island in the Azores. Am I saying that right? The Azores? Out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Azores, thank you. And he's attending the service. It's Holy Week. The windows are covered, so it's dark inside. There are candles lit. There are priests kneeling in gorgeous robes, he writes, with their heads resting on the altar steps. Suddenly bursts forth a new chant, Gloria in Excelsis. In that instant, every curtain was rolled aside. The cathedral was bathed in glory. The organs clashed. The bells chimed. Flowers were thrown from the galleries. And yet I thought the whole of this sublime transformation consisted in letting in the light of day. These priests and attendants, each stationed at his post, had only removed the darkness they themselves had made. Unveil these darkened windows, but remove also these darkening walls. The temple itself is but a lingering shadow of that gloom. Instead of its coarse and stifling incense, give us God's pure air and teach us that the broadest religion is the best. And I suppose I could say the end, because that's where he ends his essay. Which is interesting to me because it doesn't seem to be a celebration of all these different religions so much as it's we need to leave all of them behind and come to something bigger. Oneness, manyness, they're tricky. What Higginson says there feels condescending to me. I don't want to be too harsh on Higginson. He was an amazing, remarkable person. And I know that part of what he's trying to argue for is, and what he's motivated by, is this feeling that he wants to set people's spirits free. The historian Lee Eric Schmidt points out that we should pay attention not just to what Higginson wrote, but to what he did. Among other things, he was an ardent abolitionist. This is one of the ways that he was very activist in his life. He was one of the secret six that funded John Brown and that attempt to start a revolution by attacking the munitions emplacement at Harper's Ferry. In the Civil War, Higginson was proud to lead the first company made up of formerly enslaved black men. He was proud to serve with that company. He spent a lot of time with them, and he was so moved by these spirituals and what W.E.B. Du Bois called the sorrow songs that they would sing. Schmidt tells us that Higginson was moved by the religious spirit of the soldiers in his command. He observed that their devotion grows more beautiful to me in living longer with them. Schmidt says that Higginson even developed an appreciative understanding of the clapping, drumming, dancing, and ecstasy of the African-American shout tradition, something, by the way, that lots of his fellow abolitionists could not find an appreciation for. Higginson insisted instead that such rights were, quote, thoroughly identified with, quote, the most genuine religious emotions. So I think Higginson had an appreciation of difference. I don't think he wanted the soldiers to be just like him. And our Unitarian Universalist value of pluralism is rooted in that desire, I think, that he had to celebrate oneness, connection, and diversity. It makes me think of something that I value from my own growing up when I was a kid in Minnesota. My family was involved in an organization called the International Institute. And my grandmother worked there, and after she retired, my aunt took her place there. And it was a place where they helped immigrants and refugees to Minnesota. They helped with English classes. They helped refugees get citizenship. But it was also a place where they encouraged these immigrants to celebrate and to share their ethnic food and music and dance and other traditions. My grandmother, my mother's mother, started a Polish folk dancing group with her husband, my grandfather. And at the Institute, she helped start all kinds of other dance groups, Danish, German, Mexican, Russian, Filipino. And she could teach all of these things. She learned all this stuff. The big event every 3 or 4 years was something called the Festival of Nations. And it took over the entire St. Paul Civic Center, both the old one and the new one at the time. My folks and my family were busy running things, so my brother and I were kind of left to run around this whole place. And one of my favorite parts of it, of course, the food in the new arena. You could go right on the floor of the new arena, and then around the whole thing were all booths just from all around the world. And I would indulge my sweet tooth and get my mango lassi from the Indian booth and my apple skivers from the Danish booth and that fried tortilla with sugar and cinnamon from the Mexican booth, its name of which I never remember. What is that? Churros, yes, thank you. There were exhibits all throughout the Civic Center with people crafting and sewing and carving and more. There was dancing. My dad was the MC for a dance program that happened several times each day. All these different ethnic groups, all in costume. I remember colors swirling everywhere, steel drums and alpine horns and accordions and violins and guitars and more. We didn't really travel beyond the borders of Minnesota when I was growing up, but going to the festival felt like traveling around the world. My Aunt Gloria said that the festival felt like a homecoming for all the immigrants and refugees that were part of helping make that event happen. They could get together with others who speak their language. They could eat the food that comes from their home countries and cultures. She said it makes them feel like they're at home. And the festival sure did make it feel like the whole world is just one big family. And we were all the same in many ways. We all had dances. The dances were wildly different from one another. And I don't think it was the samenesses that we shared that made the experience as wonderful as it was. It was all that wild variety, all the ways the people and cultures and religions were different. And I thought it was just so much fun. We want to celebrate the many, and we want to celebrate oneness, and it's a tricky thing to do, to value both of those things. In the statement that getting voted on this summer, pluralism is stated as the value. I read you the description of it, but it's actually all through that statement. You can spot places where pluralism is, again, yes, that's the value that's driving us. So I think aspiring to celebrate pluralism is one of the defining characteristics of Unitarian Universalism. It's one of the things that makes us different from other faith traditions, I think, is this desire, this urge, this calling to try and celebrate as best we can a plurality of beliefs and traditions. So in one place it says, in that statement. Not only that we draw from many sources, so pluralism, more than one, we draw from many sources, but more than just that, we respect the histories, contexts, and cultures in which those sources were created and are currently practiced. We don't want to just appropriate ideas or practices from different sources. We don't want to just boil everything down to slag and to the melting pot and make everything the same. The challenge is to allow each source, each tradition to be what it is and not to sever it from its own history or culture, and yet to find a way to appreciate and celebrate and learn from all these different sources. The challenge is in the oneness to allow there to be a manyness. And it is pluralism, as it's described in this statement, pluralism is the thing, the fact that there are so many different traditions and so many more sources to explore, that's what calls us to learn, to feel like we have something to explore and learn, something that we need to do together, because we are that pluralism. We need to learn with and from one another. Grateful for the experiences that move us, aware of the religious ancestries we inherit, and enlivened by the diversity which enriches our faith, we are called to ever deepen and expand our wisdom. Our goal is to be one and many. Our goal is to be many and one. And I think it's worthy to note that what's inspiring us here to learn and to grow isn't the oneness, it's the manyness. It's the experience and revelation of the many that calls us on. And may it continue to do so. May we experience the oneness of the many without forgetting the manyness of the one. May we be many and one, living, learning, and loving. May we be one and many, heads, hearts, and hands. May it be so.